Today on Blue 58, the NFL draft is nearly here, and that means we've got to wrap up our pre-draft positional previews, concluding with the defensive line. If the Packers are ready to add talent on the defensive line, where should they look?
Blue 58!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue 58, the one and only podcast of thepowersweep.com. I'm your host, John Meerdink, and I'm happy to be with you here for another episode. We've got to end somewhere, and this year we are ending with the defensive line. It's an interesting class. I've said that about every position because they are all interesting. Some really, really good athletes this year on the defensive line, and then a bunch of different kinds of guys that you can look at on the defensive line. A bunch of different directions the Packers could go with it. You've got your short, squatty guys. You've got your long, long athletes. You've got guys that are just incredible testers. You can find it all. And on top of all that, there are some guys that are just phenomenally productive in this year's draft class. A good, good mix and a lot of value at all levels of the draft. According to our numbers, there were 23 players projected to go in the top 250 again at the time of our capture. 14 of those guys were in the top 150. And of the guys that were available in that overall sample of 23, 9 of them made it into at least one of our tiers, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3. But there are some very near misses. All that to say, there's at least probably 10 to a dozen or so guys that you could reasonably draft in this year's draft class that would check a lot of the boxes that we look for. And then there's any number of guys beyond that that we may just not have numbers on or just don't meet the thresholds for whatever reason that could still be very good players. I think if you're looking for defensive line help in this year's draft, the overall point here is you're probably in pretty good shape. There's a lot of stuff that you can do. The problem for the Packers is that it's a little bit unclear what they need or what they want. In terms of their needs, you could say that they're set for right now, but their depth on the defensive line, I would say, is pretty uncertain in both the short and long term. So short term, like the next 1 to 2 years, long term, beyond that. Short term, Kenny Clark is in a contract year. Devontae Wyatt could be in his second to last year. That's a long way to go, but they're going to have to pick up his first-year option one way or another, decide on his first-year option one way or another after this year. Then you've got Carl Brooks and Colby Wooden both in year two, and I think both are question marks in their own way, looking a little bit longer term. On Carl Brooks, I think you're wondering if he showed you all he's got in 2023. Did he just peak there? Is that maximum Carl Brooks? You'd like to think not, but it's certainly possible. Then you ask about Colby Wooden. Does he really have anything at all? There were a lot of advanced and not so advanced numbers that pointed to Wooden not having a particularly good rookie year. And from the outset, there were some fit questions about him. And then you've got TJ Slayton heading into his final year of his contract. You've got to ask yourself, what is he to the Packers? And maybe more specifically, what is he to Jeff Hafley? Does he fit with Hafley's vision for the defensive line? And that leads us to the second point. Their wants are also unclear. The book on a Jeff Hafley-style defense, you know, looking at Robert Saleh, the larger kind of Seahawks-Jaguars tree there, Gus Bradley, Pete Carroll, all those guys that started kind of the defense that has filtered down through Saleh and Hafley and D'Amico Ryans and guys like that, is the idea is they want smaller defensive linemen, especially edge rushers, but also elsewhere on their defensive line. They tend to go a little bit smaller. Brian Gutekunst has generally preferred bigger bodies, again, specifically on the edge, but there are some other exceptions there too. Dean Lowry in particular stuck around for a long time. Colby Wooden, again, isn't winning any height-weight competitions in the near future. Devontae Wyatt isn't like a huge defensive lineman. Even Kenny Clark isn't just the biggest guy in the world either, but they have gone, I think, a little bit bigger than the historical book on the sort of Hafley-style defense that we've seen throughout the league. So those two different ends of the spectrum, I think, are going to pull on each other a little bit. Who ends up moving toward the other? Does Hafley go bigger, or does Gutekunst get a little bit smaller? These are completely rhetorical questions. I don't know the answer to that. It's just something I think we have to consider as we look at guys in this year's draft class, and you might have to keep a little bit more of an open mind about guys that the Packers maybe historically wouldn't have considered. Maybe a guy who's a little bit lighter, a defensive lineman who's in that like 290 range as opposed to 310 or 315, something like that. I don't know, but you maybe just try to have an open mind about whoever they end up picking. And maybe that does end up giving a little bit more a little bit more weight, no pun intended, to a guy like Colby Wooden. But he certainly is a different type than they've historically looked for, being on the extreme light end for a defensive lineman. Just think about things maybe a little bit differently here, and guys that you might dismiss out of hand in the past, you can't rule out entirely. We land on defensive line prospects similarly to other positions we've looked at. We're looking at elite athletes, mostly to keep things to a manageable number when it comes to defensive linemen. So guys who have a relative athletic score above 8. I will say, on the defensive line, athleticism appears to matter a little bit less. It's more about what you do with it, in my opinion. You'd prefer, if you could, to have all elite athletes everywhere. Everybody would. That's I think, is a no-brainer. But on the defensive line, I think you could get away with being like a middle to just okay athlete a lot more than you can elsewhere, because if you've got the size and if you've got the technique, I think that will make up for your overall lack of athleticism. If you are, say, just some 340-pound monster and you can hold the point of attack, well, you're probably not going to have a great relative athletic score number, but you can do the things that a team is going to need you to do. And I think that wins out long term. So we consider the relative athletic score stuff as far as we're looking at defensive linemen, not a primary characteristic, just something that we're using to look at the ultra athletes, really. There are going to be plenty of other guys that are close. So just, again, keep that in mind. But the other numbers we look at, production ratio of 0.75 or better, that's a bit lower than we look for on the edge. Your defensive linemen are not putting up the same kind of numbers that your edge rushers are in terms of sacks and tackles for loss, so we adjust things lower accordingly, because if you just ran with the edge rusher numbers, you wouldn't have anybody to talk about. We've also added in pressure rate for this year. I'm looking for guys that have a pressure rate of 10% or better, but since you're going to find practically nobody that meets both of those things, we're going to include everybody who meets one or just one of those in tier two or better. So tier one is going to be all three. You're an 8+ RAS athlete. You've got the production ratio. You've got the pressure rate. Tier two is relative athletic score plus one of the others. And then tier three is just your elite testers. We're looking for the really crazy athletes to put on our defensive line, just the big, strong dudes up front. So all that background leads us to a few guys that we can talk about. But before we talk about those guys, I want to remind you that we are doing a mailbag episode of Blue 58 on Friday, tomorrow. So if you're listening to this on Thursday, April 18th, and you still want to drop in a question, pop in our Discord server by becoming a patron or supporting us on Substack, patreon.com/thepowersweep. Substack is thepowersweep.substack.com. Contribute any amount, either of those spots, you get into the Discord server. Or if you'd prefer, we're going to try to give precedence to the people who ask via Discord. But if you want to go the long route, thepowersweep1959@gmail.com is our email address. And if you want to drop something in there, we'll try to get to it as well. But basically, I'm just going to make a list of the questions, research as many of them as I can, and then we'll answer as many questions as I can during a mailbag episode. And it'll be as long as it's going to be. Plus, we've got something else in the works for early next week in terms of a draft preview thing. Got a lot of stuff coming your way. Excited about draft season and excited to see who the Packers end up picking 1 week from today as I record this. So, defensive line prospects. Who we got? The first on the big board is 16th overall consensus mock draft big board guy, Byron Murphy out of Texas. 6 feet tall, 297 pounds. He hits on relative athletic score, just misses on production ratio, but his pressure rate is 12.06%, the second highest in our sample of defensive linemen. That makes him a tier two prospect. You look at his grades, he has consistently improved over his time at Texas. Pro Football Focus basically has a solid arrow pointing up on his time there as a Longhorn. A borderline elite pass rush numbers. He hit actually the edge pressure rate threshold. So he's putting pressure on the quarterback as an interior rusher, comparable to what an edge rusher is doing from the outside. That is no small feat. But I guess I'm setting myself up there. You talk about small, no two ways about it. He is small for a defensive lineman. That is not a deal breaker for me. I don't think it's a deal breaker for the Packers. If you look at some of the things that they've done historically, there are some outliers there. Mike Daniels immediately comes to mind. But it could be a real problem. It might take him off some people's boards entirely. A 6 foot, 297 pound defensive lineman is probably about as big as he's ever going to get. He's not going to add significantly more weight. It would be a real surprise to see him add any more height, though it's not impossible. Stranger things have happened. But he is on the smaller side for an interior defensive lineman. Fun fact about him from the Pro Football Focus draft guide. Put this on your radar. Perhaps nothing better sums up Murphy's strength than physical strength as a player, than that he played nose tackle despite 360-pound Devondre Sweat, the Sweat's presence on the Texas defensive line. That's a pretty ringing endorsement for a guy who is a little bit smaller, but he's playing the most probably physically demanding position on your defensive lineman, despite there being a much, much bigger guy on your defensive line. Next up is number 45, Braden Fisk out of Florida State, a 6'3", 292-pound prospect. Tier 1 guy, 9.88 relative athletic score, production ratio of 1.01. Put an asterisk on there, though, because he has 36 tackles for loss, 19.5 sacks in 55 college games. There is some discrepancy in his numbers on the number of games he played in college, which would drop him down below that 1.0 threshold. College Football Reference has him for 55 games. His Florida State bio has him playing 58 games. Take that however you will. He's done pretty well production-wise. He has a pressure rate at over 11%, which is good no matter how many games he's played in. And that really is the credit here for Fisk. As productive as you'll find among the members of this defensive line group, undeniable numbers across the board. Has it in both the counting stats and the rate stats. I think that bodes pretty well for his success at the NFL level. The knock on him is that he's kind of got this weird mix of being an older prospect but being sort of inexperienced. He started out at, I forgot to look it up. I believe it's Western Michigan before ending up at Florida State, somewhere else. It was Western Michigan because you got I noted the Matt LaFleur connection for his fun fact here. He started out at Western Michigan, played a bunch of games there, 30 starts, but didn't play just a ton of snaps at Florida State. And the Pro Football Focus draft guide, they noted he only averaged like 29.8 snaps per game. He was not just a guy who was on the field all the time, which you can take a number of different ways. Did they not have him on the field all the time because he wasn't that good? Did they have other guys who were comparably as good? They just have a bunch of really good defensive linemen. They were just rotating everybody in and out. You can interpret that a bunch of different ways. Just included in your mind as a data point here. He will also be 24 years old on draft day, so that makes him an older prospect. He'd be 25 heading into his second season. Sometimes a deal breaker for the Packers. They like generally to draft younger prospects, though not always. Devontae Wyatt is a notable outlier there. Fun fact, though, as I noted, he did play at Western Michigan, where Packers head coach Matt LaFleur also played for a short spell. Maybe possible connection there. You're really stretching, I think, if you're hoping for that. But of note, at least. Number 51 on the consensus mock draft big board is Chris Jenkins out of Michigan. 6'2", 299 pounds. He is just an athleticism guy. Tier 3 prospect, 8.91 relative athletic score. Production is sometimes a usage thing. You don't have as many opportunities to rush the passer, so you don't get as many sacks or even tackles for loss. It's hard to put up a good pressure rate if, even though you are technically rushing the passer on a passing down, it may just be more your job to eat up blocks to clean up another guy on a stunt, just rushing as a two-gap pass rusher, trying to take up as many blocks as you can, setting up somebody else to really go after the quarterback. That is some people's jobs. I don't have an in-depth knowledge of Michigan's defensive schemes, so I can't say for sure what Jenkins was doing there. But I do think it is interesting that he has some questionable pass rush numbers, and we had this same discussion a few years ago about Rashawn Gary and his numbers. We can learn the lesson there. It wasn't always Rashawn Gary's job to get to the quarterback at Michigan, and he's proven in the NFL that he can do it quite well. So college numbers aren't everything, but Jenkins does not have particularly good production numbers in college. He does, however, have pretty good size for a guy who's probably going to end up being a three-technique defensive tackle, has good athleticism, again, does not have the production, but seems like the kind of guy, just looking at what people say about him, how he played at Michigan, how much he played at Michigan, he seems like the kind of guy where you're going to plug him in and he's going to be a non-negative player for you on your defense for a pretty long time. He may not be a guy who's like a centerpiece of your defense, but he's not going to make your defense worse. And sometimes having guys like that is really, really valuable. If you can be on an NFL defense and if not make plays, at least not give up plays for the opposing team, you can still be a valuable player. Just go out there and do your job, help other people do their job well. That's a valuable skill set. Fun fact about Chris Jenkins, his dad, Chris Jenkins Sr., played in the NFL, and his uncle, Cullen Jenkins, played in the NFL. That's not the fun fact. You probably knew that. You probably guessed that from his last name. But the fun fact here is that Cullen Jenkins, I uncovered this in my research or realized this in my research, arrived in Green Bay in 2003. So actually, that's not very fun at all. That's not super fun. That makes me feel very old to think about Cullen Jenkins arriving in Green Bay in 2003. So let's move on to Mason Smith out of LSU, number 64 on the big board. 6'5", 306 pounds, 8.96 relative athletic score, production ratio of 0.8 pressure rate, just 7.04%. So that makes him a tier two prospect. Not great on the pressure rate, though overall pretty productive. Has nice size. 6'5", 306 makes him the biggest guy we've looked at so far. The first guy with no real length concerns anywhere in his scouting report. Doesn't have short arms, isn't too short. Just a well-sized player, put it that way. The bad stuff is some medical concerns there. He had a torn ACL in 2020 through 2022. Obviously, that destroyed that season and may have limited him a bit in 2023. His ceiling may also be a little bit limited as a result of the diminished athleticism that comes with a torn ACL, but there is a flip side there. He may still have potential and growth ahead of him as he continues to move further and further away from that ACL tear. Fun fact about Mr. Smith here, his parents named him Mason because with two A's, M-A-A-S-O-N, because they wanted to differentiate his name from other Masons that may be out there. So I think they certainly accomplished that goal. To whichever team that ends up drafting him, I insist that you nickname him the Battery because he is a double A. Next up, number 65, Rook Orororo out of Clemson. That was, I think, a pretty solid attempt at pronouncing his name. If you just see it in print, it's going to mess with your mind a little bit. But in the official Clemson pronunciation guide, it's Orororo. So it's fun to say. It's challenging to say, but it's a fun name. So I showed this name to my wife, and she said if the Packers end up drafting him, that we should just call him Ruko, which I think is a neat nickname, which would be a lot easier to say than his last name. But in any case, 6'4", 294 pounds. The athlete's athlete among defensive linemen, a 9.9 relative athletic score, 0.87 production ratio for his career, and a pressure rate of just 8%, so a tier two prospect here. But as good an athlete as you could ask for, close to ideal size, maybe a little bit light, but you're going to add 10 pounds maybe in the NFL and not really worry about it too much. If you could play at or above 300 pounds, that puts you in pretty good position for a guy with his athleticism. The bad here, the knock on him, is that maybe he is just an athlete. Maybe not so much a knock as just the big question about Orororo. Is he just an athlete? Is he winning because he's more athletic than the guys he's playing against? You have questions about technique kind of related to that. I think that is a fair question to ask about this and other players on the defensive line. It's similar to edge rusher in a lot of respects. You have a lot of guys that haven't had to learn how to be pass rushers or defensive linemen. You don't learn about footwork or hand placement or leverage as much when you are just bigger and stronger and faster than everybody else. Because why would you? Why would you bother spending practice time learning technique when you can spend more practice time or maybe just time in the weight room or whatever doing more of what you're already good at to increase those qualities? You understand why guys end up at this point in their NFL careers, because they just don't have to be good at the other things. Ideally, you want somebody who's a super-duper athlete and a brilliant technician as well, but you just don't get that with the amount of practice time that they have in college and just the fact that these are very young men who may not be focused on that sort of improvement right now. And you've got coaches who don't necessarily have an incentive to add those things to these players. Because if you've got a guy like our buddy Ruko here, who's doing a good job just being a big athlete, why would you bother trying to waste practice time, trying time making him better at the things that aren't going to benefit you? if he needs to be a better technician at the NFL level to succeed at the NFL level, you kind of look at him and say, that's either your problem or your future NFL coach's problem. You're doing what I need you to do right now. I'm going to spend my time in practice or whatever working with a guy who isn't succeeding because you're doing just a fine job. Is kind of a misalignment of incentives there. And you see why guys end up in this sort of position where you wonder if they are just good athletes and maybe not good football players yet because they haven't had to be good football players to this point. I don't know for sure if that's all necessarily true about this player in particular, but I think that is sort of an endemic problem to draft analysis and stuff like that. Guys get knocked for not having great technical skills when they haven't had to develop them and coaches have no reason to develop them. The fun fact about Orororo is that he has been at Clemson since 2019, but is only 22 and a half years old on draft day. Also graduated with a sociology degree in 3 years. Not too shabby at all. Bonus fun fact, he says in his official Clemson bio that he picked the school in part because he enjoyed playing with them on the NCAA video game, which I just think is kind of neat. Next up is prospect number 111, Mekhi Wingo out of LSU, another LSU guy for our consideration here. 6 feet tall, 284 pounds here, looking at a maybe even slightly shorter Colby Wooden there, weight-wise. He's just an athleticism guy, cracked 8 in relative athletic score. Not too shabby grade-wise as a defender. Comes up in his scouting reports as well. That is a mainly effort thing, I think, both in college and in the NFL. Run defense comes down basically just to a lot of effort, which I think is a credit to Wingo here. The bad stuff is that he's really the very definition of a tweener. The weight says a very heavy edge rusher or maybe a three-technique defensive tackle. The height says maybe you're an off-ball linebacker and a short one at that. What do you do with a guy who's 6 feet tall and 284 pounds? They do list him in the official LSU bio as being 6'1". He measured at the combine closer to 6 feet tall, certainly under 6'1". He's a small defensive lineman. What do you do with that? I don't have a great answer for you there. Fun fact about him, he was presented the number 18 jersey prior to the start of the 2023 season. And according to LSU, the number 18 jersey is given to the player who best represents the traits associated with LSU football and its mission to graduate champion. So Wingo, the the unofficial mascot of LSU football for what he brings to their program. That, I think, is a pretty significant honor. A few guys below the 150 threshold. So on the big board, we've focused more on the guys that are in the top 150 or so. There's a few other guys that I think are worth mentioning here outside the top 150. 158 is Gabe Hall out of Baylor, 9-2-1 relative athletic score. Big, long guy, 6'6", 291 pounds. If we're looking for the connections to like the Robert Saleh, D'Amico Ryans, maybe San Francisco 49ers tree, Eric Armstead comes up immediately to mind just as a physical comparison here. I think you could wonder if the Packers might need to add a guy like that or might be interested in adding a guy like that. You've got very intriguing physical characteristics, if nothing else. So a great, great start, at least in terms of that part of his scouting report there. Number 207 is Jaden Crumedy out of Mississippi State, 8.78 relative athletic score. Productivity numbers were not even close, but he's a good enough athlete that you at least have to pay attention. Then Logan Lee out of Iowa is number 238 on the consensus mock draft big board, a 9.16 relative athletic score, close on production ratio, 0.65 for his career. Maybe some late round value there, has some nice size. I don't know, maybe another rotational prospect on the defensive line. Now, a few guys who came really, really close here. Number 25, Jerzon Newton out of Illinois, does not actually meet the overall thresholds because we have no testing data on him, but a career production ratio of 1.03 and a 9.6 career pressure rate, that is a really, really good profile. For guys that fit the very definition of close but no cigar, how about number 90, Leonard Taylor out of Miami, Florida, and number 109, Dwayne Carter out of Duke. Again, so, so close. 7.47 and 7.85 relative athletic score, respectively. Taylor, a career production ratio of 1.02 and a pressure rate of 9.44. Carter, 0.73 on production or production ratio, there you go, and 9.93 on pressure rate. Really, really good prospects, just do not quite hit our thresholds for getting into the defensive line discussion. But again, really, really good. If the Packers ended up drafting one of those guys, would not have concerns there at all. Wouldn't be saying, like, I don't know, he doesn't fit with what we historically look for. Maybe that is technically true, but they're so close that I don't think you can ignore them as prospects. But yeah, I think a really, really exciting defensive line group. There's a lot of interesting prospects here, and the Packers could do a lot of interesting things on the defensive line. And it's just going to depend what they want and what they view as their longer-term needs as they approach, I guess, wow, again, the potential end of the Kenny Clark era, at least the Kenny Clark era being closer to the end than the beginning, let's put it that way, and starting to plan for what a post-Kenny Clark defensive line might look like in Green Bay, starting to add some longer-term talent there. Maybe it's something you can put off for a year, but certainly not much more than that if they want to add more talent on the defensive line. That's it. We got all the defensive linemen. We got all the other positions covered. We're not going to talk about specialists because I'm not going to waste your time talking about punters and kickers. If the Packers end up acquiring one in the draft, we'll talk about them at that time. But as one of my old coaching colleagues used to say, the hay's in the barn. We got the prep done. There's some more stuff that we want to do pre-draft, but that's pretty much it. All we got to do now is sit and wait for Roger Goodell to walk across the stage to get this thing started. There's going to be a wild Thursday night and a wild weekend ahead. I'm excited. Can't wait to see what the Packers end up doing, and I'm excited to walk through and cover all of this with you as we learn about what the Packers are going to look like coming into the 2024 season after this weekend. So I've got for you in this episode of Blue 58. I appreciate you tuning in. I'd appreciate it even more if you'd take a second and share this episode with someone you think would enjoy it. It's going to help more people find the show and get more people involved in this conversation we're having about the Green Bay Packers, which in turn is going to help all of us, me included, become smarter Packers fans. And as I always say, smarter Packers fans are better Packers fans, and better Packers fans are what we all want to be. I'm your host, John Meerdink. We'll see you next time on Blue 58.